The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, y'all, you just heard me. James Harden returning to H-Town tonight to face his former team after signing with the Brooklyn Nets in January, although the breakup from the Rockets after his 8-year tenure wasn't particularly pretty, but what breakup is. James Harden joined the Rockets in 2012, and in his A-plus seasons there became the franchise's all-time leader in assists, three-pointers, and free throws, and only Hakeem Olajuwon scored more points. Harden led the Rockets to 8 straight playoff berths, including 2 trips to the conference finals. Here's what he had to say about his return.
Love and the appreciation that I've given to that city and that I still give to that city. Hoping that the favor can be returned.
You know, I thought I would never leave that franchise. I thought I was going to be Houston, obviously, for the rest of my career. Things happen. You know, I'd have different goals. And, you know, I seen a different vision for myself, my career, my family.
Stephen A., let me ask you this. Do you think Rockets fans should show James Harden love tonight?
I think Max has to go first on this, Molly, because I want to wait to give my answer here. Go ahead, Max.
Yes, they should show him love. James Harden made that franchise a perennial powerhouse. Now, he didn't show up big in the playoffs, which is why even though his regular season numbers are like Kobe Bryant or LeBron James, because he didn't perform in the playoffs and lead his team to the promised land as Kobe and LeBron have repeatedly, he is not thought of with those guys. And that's fair. He shouldn't be. You have to be Kobe or LeBron to get a big reception? Now, eventually he forced his way out of town. He kind of played his way out, right? Should the city boo him for that? Think about what it takes to win a championship. We think, Stephen A., if AD is not 100%, the Nets have a really good chance to win the championship. It's James Harden, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Durant, and shooters, and like everything you want. And we think there's a good chance they can win a championship. It is so hard to win a title. And for whatever reason, the state of Texas has not been seen by free agents, potential free agents, as a desirable enough or glamorous enough location for them to sign. The Rockets and the Mavs have had a hard time attracting, you know, A-level superstars, which is odd to me because it's warm weather, relatively glamorous, maybe not as much as New York or L.A. or Miami, but it's a relatively glamorous destination. As you always point out, Stephen A., no state income tax. Like, how much do you want? And yet, the Mavs and the Rockets have a hard time. Maybe it's because the Cowboys loom so large in that state that you always play second fiddle. I don't know what it is. But the fact is, James Harden was in a situation where he never really had quite enough. In spite of that, they came really close. And yes, he choked. If Harden would have played better, maybe they'd win the championship. But they came closer than they should have based on the talent they had. And a lot of that had to do with James Harden. And finally, Stephen A., the fans have to realize, while if they boo Harden, if they don't give him a good welcome back return, a reception, they may be thinking they're making commentary on Harden, but really the rest of the league is commentary on themselves. Is that the kind of place that you want to play? When a dude has done as much for an organization as Harden has, and they treat him that way, I think it's even in their own best self-interest to give Harden a good welcome.
Well, we go away from the purposes of this show, Max Kellerman, because we don't disagree. I don't believe that Harden deserves to be booed. I want to make sure I'm very clear about that. But I do believe he will be. I don't think he deserves it. I don't think somebody that averaged 37 minutes a game in 8-plus seasons for that team, that averaged 29-7-6 in that span and took them to the playoffs every single year, not to mention coming out of his own pocket in terms of millions of dollars that he donated to causes to help with relief efforts and things of that nature with some of the catastrophes that they've had to deal with. He's been a model citizen, not to mention a great, great player for the franchise. And in that regard, he does not deserve to be booed. And I hope that he's not. But I must confess to you, I would be shocked if he's not booed, at least by some in attendance. Now, obviously, when you take into account his off-court of philanthropic efforts and things of that nature, it's pretty hard to do anything negative towards him, and they shouldn't. From a basketball perspective, though, I can't knock them if they do boo him in this regard. He departs. He shows up. He's not in shape. It clearly is on purpose because he doesn't want to be there. Fair enough. Now that he's gone, they're one of the worst teams in basketball. His exit has basically plummeted the entire franchise. They are on a 12-game losing streak. They are in basketball purgatory right now. They're clearly one of the worst teams in the NBA, and there's no way around it. And I feel my heart goes out to Steven Silas, who waited 20 years as an assistant to become a head coach, and this is what he's saddled with. John Wall is averaging 20-6. Christian Wood is averaging 22-10. Victor Oladipo hasn't been that great. He doesn't want to be there anyway. It's just not a good situation right now. But that also has something to do with James Harden. You wanted Dwight Howard, and then you didn't. You wanted Chris Paul, and then you didn't. You want to play with Russell Westbrook, and then y'all didn't want to play with one another. And along the way, they gave up assets. They don't do that if it were not for James Harden. So even though James Harden is absolutely phenomenal in every sense of the word as far as I'm concerned, and I don't view him as a person that choked in the postseason, he averaged 28 even though his numbers were down compared to what we're accustomed to seeing him during a regular season. If you want to use that as to describe it, but I don't consider that choking. In the end, what I'm saying is the ultimate indictment they will make against him if they choose to boo him is the fact that having to make a deal to send him to Brooklyn and garner assets in return because they had given them away in previous deals just to get him the assets that he had asked for. Those are the kind of things that people who know something about basketball in Houston may tend to hold against them because the state of affairs that exists now is primarily because they tried to give him everything he said he needed in order for them to elevate to another level. He wasn't wrong in doing that. He thought it gave them a best chance to go for the chip. He was right to do so, but it doesn't mean that they're going to interpret it that way. And that's why I'm fearful they're probably going, some people anyway, are going to boo him.
That's reasonable. And it's fair to say. The only thing I would say is that when Golden State put that team together, Stephen A., with KD and Steph and Clay and Dre, and they had everybody, what are you going to do? Like, he had a good GM, a great GM, I think, in Houston. But once you're facing a team like that, what are you supposed to do? For example, Daryl Morey's done a great job in Philly, surrounding Simmons and Embiid with shooters. Look at the difference it's made. And yet, if you ask you or me or anyone, you really think they're going to beat the Nets when it comes down to it? Nah, man, KD and Kyrie and Harden, it's just too much. So all I'm saying is if Fertitta and the fans, like this goes from ownership to fans, want to be the kind of place where players want to come together, consider the way you treat a dude like Harden when he returns. That makes a difference.
Well, that's fair. Remember, Daryl Morey doesn't have final say in Philadelphia. It's Elton Brand and Doc Rivers, too.
Here's the good news. Stephen A., you're pregame for this game, so you can talk about it more then. And Max, you have the Max Kellerman show, so you got 2 hours to talk about this. So plenty more with these two later in the day. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Well, this is going to be a fun discussion. The Green Bay Packers are dealing with cap restraints that could lead to free agency dilemmas going into the 2021 season. Here's what Brian Gutekunst had to say about how the team will deal with it all.
We won't be able to do a lot, and I do think that there's certainly some restrictions, but if the right guy's there, I think we'd be able to do what we need to do.
Well, well, well. Stephen A. Smith. Yeah. You know, last year was tough. Aaron Rodgers was looking for some help, and they drafted what? Quarterback. Now, this year, I'm hearing that they're not really going to make a big splash. I just want to know what you think of all this.
No, I'm so surprised. I'm stunned. Aren't y'all stunned? I mean, aren't we shocked? I mean, we're shocked, and you're just thrown aback, just taken aback. I mean, my God, the Green Bay Packers are not going to be major players in free agency. They're not going to be able to do but so much in free agency to help Aaron Rodgers. I'm so shocked. I mean, I'm about ready to faint, Max Kellerman. I didn't know this was possible. I mean, I thought for sure they were just going to draft another first rounder, a wide receiver. Don't they do that all the time? I mean, I thought they were going to get a premier tight end. I mean,
what's he going to do with another first round wide receiver?
Exactly. That tight end out of Florida.
Just get
that
another big-time quarterback. Tight end out of Florida.
I thought they were going to get him. I mean, who are they going to get? I mean, the Green Bay Packers are not going to make major noise in free agency. I'm so stunned. I mean, this never happened before. I mean, every single year, they just throw one weapon after another to Aaron Rodgers. They do everything they can to appease him, to make him happy, to make sure that he is surrounded with the pieces and the parts that he needs to excel and ascend and ultimately get them over that proverbial hump so they can get back to the Super Bowl for the first time since 2010. They're always looking out for Aaron Rodgers. Of course, they're an organization. It's not just about him. It's about all of us, and we're going to do everything that we can because we know he's the ringleader. We know he's the superstar. We know he's the creme de la creme, and we got to take care of our man. Of course they're going to do that. We know better. We know who they are. Aaron Rodgers to them is just another player until he hints about wanting to leave or he hints about being happy, and they have to contemplate life without him. Then they get serious for a second to recognize the fact that they ain't just Aaron Rodgers waiting at the next door. I don't give a damn if his name is Jordan Love or Love Jordan or anything else in between. It don't matter. The fact of the matter is Aaron Rodgers, that bad man that he is, needs all the help that he can get, and the Green Bay Packers don't have a history of giving it to him. That's really what it comes down to. So it's more of the same. I'm not surprised. Last year when he threw for the Tavon Austin, Aaron Rodgers had thrown two passes to a first-round pick at the wide receiver spot for the first time in his career. For the first time in his career. This is what we're dealing with here when we talk about the Green Bay Packers. They know what they're doing. They know what they're doing to stay competitive. They know what they're doing to stay relevant. They know what they're doing to field a competitive team and to go out there and to say, we got a chance. But when it comes to doing what it takes to get over the hump and really going for it and delivering the goods, similar to what Tampa Bay did last year, that's not in Green Bay's DNA. And they don't give a damn if Aaron Rodgers suffered because their attitude is shut up and play. That's how they treat him. That's how they've been treating him. And it's a damn shame. But I'm not surprised.
Well, I mean, first of all, they can't afford free agents right now. They're in a cap mess. So and they're going to have to restructure guys and
they're
do all kinds of stuff
mess.
To bring in a free agent. The question is the draft. You know, and in the previous draft, look, for Jordan Love to be able – for them to be able to justify – drafting Jordan Love when they were a 13-win team who'd beaten Seattle in the playoffs, right? They had a playoff win, 13 wins. By the way, Mike McCarthy wasn't it. Aaron Rodgers got LaFleur as his new coach, 13 wins that year as Rodgers is figuring it out, you know? And now you're thinking, oh boy, if he's just figuring it out as sort of a game manager because he has to understand the new offense, what's going to happen when he really gets it? And there was a chance to get him a first-round wide out for the first time ever, Stephen A., really, as you point out. And they didn't do it. They drafted a quarterback. Well, that guy's got to make the Hall of Fame now. like Jordan Love's got no pressure, but you got picked in the first round instead of giving Rodgers a receiver who just won 13 games. That said, Stephen A little tough to really get too hard with the Packers when they won 13 games again. I mean, a lot of that's Rodgers, but yeah, that's part of what Rodgers allows you to do. It allows you to save over here and over there and have a more well-rounded team because Rodgers can cover up for some of the deficiencies on offense and even make you really good on offense without the same stuff other people need. And so they win 13 games again, and this time they're in the NFC Championship game. And with the game on the line a couple times, Rodgers didn't come through. And I'm talking – now, he did was it a blunder by LaFleur not to hand him back the ball? Of course it was a blunder. It was also a blunder by Rodgers when he had daylight not to make a run for it. Maybe they score. Maybe they're on the one-yard line. Then they'll go for it. I'm just saying right now I can't criticize the Packers about not going for a free agent. They don't have the money. And now that they've drafted Jordan Love, I expect them to draft a wideout. They have draft capital now to go out and address needs. I think Rodgers right now is in a better position than he's been in years with the Packers. And the fact that they didn't play on this in the Super Bowl this season, Stephen A., is kind of on him. He makes the plays. They play in the Super Bowl. He'll have another really good chance at it this year, maybe even better than last year.
Well, I mean, you sound crazy from the standpoint that, listen, nobody's perfect. And you know what? I saw Tom Brady throw three interceptions in the second half of that NFC Championship game, if I remember correctly. That didn't mean that Bruce Arians was going to tell him to stop throwing the damn football. It didn't mean he was going to take the ball out of his hands. It didn't mean that if he was coaching against Tom Brady, he was going to give him an opportunity to give him the damn ball with a little bit over 2 minutes left, and all he needs is a first down or two to seal the deal. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that I'm talking about. So pointing about what Aaron Rodgers didn't do, I recall them being down 28-10. And Aaron Rodgers bringing them back and marching them downfield, okay? And the next thing you know, yeah, he could have ran for the first down, if not more, on that third down play. I get all of that. But guess what? There was still a fourth down to go. And Aaron Rodgers, here's the key. Aaron Rodgers said, hey, I never contemplated the fact that the ball would be taken out of my hands on fourth down. That's number one. And number two, Matt LaFleur admitted there was a miscommunication because he never communicated to Aaron Rodgers that he would take the ball out of his hands on fourth down. So I'm sorry. I'm out
well,
on the field.
Who would think that he would?
Exactly. The point
is
did.
Go.
So why not tell him?
Yeah. Can I just ask you a really quick question? Who was the MVP this year? Because I forgot.
It was Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, yeah. Aaron Rodgers. Yeah.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture X card. Earn unlimited 2x miles in everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. Plus, receive premium travel benefits like access to over 1,300 airport lounges and a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. Unlock a whole new world of travel with a Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
Amanda Nunes is the reigning UFC women's bantamweight and featherweight champion. She's the first woman to become a two-division UFC champion and the third fighter in UFC history to hold titles in two weight classes simultaneously. She's also the first and only fighter in UFC history to defend two titles while actively holding them and is widely considered to be the greatest women's MMA fighter of all time. We now welcome her to First Take in advance of UFC 259, where she'll be fighting Megan Anderson. Amanda, oi tudo bem. That's the only Portuguese that I know. My best friend's from Brazil. That's all that
That's all that I picked up. She'll be proud. She's watching. Thank you so much for being with us. And Max just said in the commercial break that you are the baddest woman on the planet. And you added another incredible feat, and that would be the birth of your daughter, now a mother, in September. So tell me how that changed you.
You know, like, first of all, thank you for having me. I'm very excited for this fight. You know, this is the first time I bring my daughter, and it's like being amazing. You know, she helped me a lot. She makes me so happy and making me better every day at home. So my morning is all different now. You know, I wake up more happy than I used to. So everything was fine. You know, she's a very good baby. We put her in a schedule, you know, she eat in the right time, she sleepy, she have her nap time, everything scheduled. So she's just a good baby. We lucky, you know, we go training, Nina watch her when I'm in the gym, and when it's Nina time, I watch her. So we have a very good schedule with the baby. So my camp was amazing. I was be able to sleep very well. So it's like, nothing's going to stop me.
Amanda, thank you for being on the show, and I completely concur with Max Kellerman. You're the baddest female on the planet. There's no question about that in my mind. I remember I'm just watching you. You knocked out Ronda Rousey. You knocked out Chris Cyborg. You beat Holly Holm. You have some great, great victories in your illustrious career thus far. But people look at you, and now I'm hearing Molly's question about motherhood. I mean, is this a situation where you're closing in, or I mean, you're thinking about stopping sometime soon fighting, or do you see yourself doing it for quite a long time to come?
Honestly, now in my life is about to keep memory, you know, and having memory with my daughter is gonna be amazing. I wanna be able, when she become a teenager or whatever, when she be able to realize things, I wanna be able to show all these moments, you know. Look, you was in this fight with your moms and everything, you know. I feel like in this moment in my career, I get everything that I want, you know. I become everything. I get all my dreams come true. And so now I just like change a little bit my life, doing other things that I didn't even thought one day I'm gonna do. Have a baby, you know. I expect to have it maybe in the future, but it's not so early like it is right now. So I'm enjoying every single day. It was the best thing that I ever did, have a baby.
Amanda, because of, and congratulations, by the way,
because
of the fact that Brazilian jiu-jitsu is clearly the most influential fighting form in the history of mixed martial arts, and you are Brazilian, you know, when you hear about fighters from Brazil, you're expecting the grappling to be the story and the BJJ to be the story, and obviously you can handle yourself there, but the power, my God, and the hand speed, and not only that, but when you fight, a lot of people can strike, but you move your head offline more like a boxer, more like someone who has a background in boxing. That's what a lot of strikers don't do in MMA. Where does that come from? I know you boxed at a young age, but how did that happen in Brazil when BJJ is so big down there?
Yeah, I come from grappling. You know, I come from jiu-jitsu. So when I started like training for MMA, I have to start training boxing, training karate, training whatever is gonna make me like well around. So when I started like training the first couple punches, the coach was the first one tell me like, oh my God, you are grappling, but you can punch, you really can get this eventually good. So you just have to keep training and keep improve your game. So when he told me, I never stopped in that moment training boxing. You know, I started to get better and better and better. But one day, I really saw what he told me was true. My fight against Julia Butt, I strike force. For that fight, it's like back in like 10 years ago, like almost 10 years ago, I was a grappling. You know, I was like straight training for taking her down and then finishing her on the floor. So I ended up knocking her out with a jab. And I look at my coach like, what is wrong? Like, I don't understand. So after that fight, I knew something even better is going to come together in my game. So I never stopped training, I striking. And now, like, I have this power. I have this speed. I know how to use my reach very well. And I incorporate my strike very well in my game. So now I can really I can really strike with anyone. And from that moment, if I feel some threat, I can take somebody down. I can finish. So I'm a well-rounded, and my strike just grew with my strength, with everything in my body. Just was a natural thing. And training hard.
Amanda, I brought up some of the great victories that you've had in your career when I spoke earlier. I want to know, at this particular juncture, at this particular point in your career, is there somebody that you particularly want very, very badly? Once upon a time, I mean, you know, again, Cyborg, people wanted her. You got her. Your people wanted Rousey. You got her. Here's a situation now where you're at the top of the heap and you're the target. But is there somebody you want, somebody you're targeting specifically, that you want to beat very, very badly?
Honestly, no, have somebody really that I look for. I'm a champion. I have to keep defending my belt. You know, this is my job. You know, whatever UFC schedule for me next, I will face. So yeah, whatever, who want to face me, I'm going to be in my spot, you know, waiting for you. So no matter what UFC want to do, I'm ready to do.
Amanda, to Stephen A's point, Anderson is a credible opponent, but a big underdog. And the history of fighting has a lot of examples of dominant champions like you who get upset when they fought the big names, and now a fighter without the same kind of name comes up on their radar, and they can't get up for the fight as much. How do you guard against that?
You know, Megan is obviously a very dangerous opponent. She worked hard for this moment. I feel like she deserved it. So, and I feel like for me, Megan is tall, you know, very tall, long, and that can give me like a little bit of trouble in the fight. But I also have a lot of experience in fight with the girls taller than me. Holly Holmes was one. Jermaine was very tall as well. So in the gym, I just switched my training partner. You know, I get like a tall guy to like really help me with my time and everything. So yeah, I feel like I'm ready. I feel like everything she has, I know, and I will capitalize and finish the fight. I feel like she's not ready yet to be a champion. I feel like she still have to go in a path for she be able to really realize how big this moment is.
Amanda, I just want to say quickly, it's Women's History Month, and one of my first jobs at ESPN way back when, 2007, was hosting our first MMA show, MMA Live, and then women weren't even allowed to fight. We didn't even know if they would be able to fight. And everything that you have accomplished, you are such an inspiration, now adding motherhood, and I'm so grateful we had you on the show. You have this infectious energy about you as well, like such a great spirit. It just comes through the screen. So thank you so much for the time, and we'll be rooting for you on Saturday.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. I'm very happy to see you guys.
All the best.
Okay. Good be luck, safe. Camp. Take care. All right, we got more UFC tomorrow on First Take. Unbeaten middleweight champion Israel Adesanya joining us live in advance of his bout at UFC 259 on Saturday. To the NFL we go. J.J. Watt ended his free agency run on Monday, announcing he will join the Arizona Cardinals in Tuesday's introductory press conference. With the team, he revealed the role quarterback Kyler Murray played in his decision-making. Take a listen.
I told him yesterday in a text, I said, I'm here because I believe in you. He's been a winner at every stage of his life. And that's not a coincidence.
Stephen A., point blank. Do you believe Watt?
No, he's lying. And I say that respectfully. I say that affectionately because I got a lot of love for J.J. Watt. But what I mean by that is this. You're going to the Cardinals because you believe in Kyler Murray? Well, then why the hell didn't you stay in Houston? Because we know you believe in Deshaun Watson. That's not the reason you went to Arizona. You went to Arizona because it's a better organization than the Houston Texans. You went to Arizona because it's probably going to be a better defense than the Houston Texans organization. You went to Arizona because you've got faith
from an organizational perspective, the manner in which they're moving forward, you like that. DeAndre Hopkins is there talking to you about, you know, what the organization is like and what their potential is. And, oh, by the way, it doesn't hurt. I understand, Max, it's not a state with no state income tax. It's not one of the 9 states in America that doesn't have any state income taxes, but the taxes in Arizona are pretty low. That's right. 23 million guaranteed, 2-year, $31 million. But people that's living in Arizona are usually people that want that California weather without the California taxes. So they move close enough to Arizona where the weather's not quite identical, but it's close enough. And it's only like a 45-minute flight to L.A. if you want to, but you don't have to be that far removed from the weather conditions that exist in Southern California. That's what that's about. That's what. Now, J.J. Watt, I mean, that's not the most popular thing to say. That's not the thing that makes headlines. That's not the thing that makes you say, oh, you know, oh, it just touches your heartstrings. Nobody's going to do that. So it's all right to sit up there and say, oh, I came here because I believe in Kyler Murray. Excuse me. Playing with your brother, TJ, and Derek in Pittsburgh, that wouldn't have been bad. Going to Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers, that wouldn't have been bad. But it's cold. It's cold in Lambeau Field. It's cold in Green Bay, Wisconsin. The only thing they got there is Aaron Rodgers and cheese. That's about it, okay? And Milwaukee's about an hour away or so, all right, with the Greek Freak. And J.J. Watt, I mean, he ain't trying to travel that much. Bottom line is, all I'm saying, I'm not saying he doesn't believe in Kyler Murray, but don't tell me that's the reason he's there. I came here because I believe in you. Stop it. You believe in Deshaun Watson. You still left Houston. We understand what time it is. It's that weather. You understand? It's with the weather without the taxes, all right? And it's probably where you're going to plan on retiring and chilling out once your playing days are over. So why not go there and get stuff settled down so once you decide not to play, you don't have to be looking for a new crib in your retirement days. You can do that right now. That's what this is about. Ain't about no damn Kyler Murray.
No, I think you're wrong on this. Look, you're saying things that may be true. You could check that off. Good weather,
or
at least warm weather, and all that stuff. But will you stop with the, you should go play with TJ and the Pittsburgh Steelers? That's just pure homerism on your part.
Oh, you mean what you do with Big Blue and the Giants every day?
And you're trying to come up with a well, okay, fine. And when you call me out on it, I admit it.
Well, Matt, well,
that's
Matt,
what's
Matt,
going on
Matt, you
here
lost all credibility
you,
when you
Stephen
gave him a nickname.
A?
When you gave him a nickname, you called him Danny Dimes. you gave Daniel Jones
Nichols.
A nickname.
Danny
I mean,
Nichols
if that
right
ain't
now.
Homerism, what is?
Danny Dimes.
If that ain't homerism, what is? Danny Dimes. I mean, come on.
Guilty. Guilty. Okay, fine. But now this is it. That was then. This is now. Why you got to bring up old stuff? Look. He believes in Kyler Murray. I believe that. And yeah, he believed in Deshaun Watson, but you know what? Deshaun Watson doesn't believe in the Texans anymore. So he doesn't know that Deshaun Watson's going to be there. He probably thinks he won't be there, right? So he's going to bounce. Now, what's the number one thing? Because he had some options. Green Bay, I don't think, was one of them. How do they afford him? They don't have the cap space. So, but he probably had some options. I imagine several teams wanted J.J. Watt and were willing to pay for it. So you could say, well, it's a $23 million guaranteed. But he can get millions and millions guaranteed from several different places. That's not, I think that among the likely candidates, he is looking for a competitive situation where he believes in the quarterback. You know, when DeAndre Hopkins got traded, it wasn't his idea, he got traded from the Texans. What did we all think? Damn, Deshaun Watson. He sees his guy have to go play with Kyler Murray, right? What Deshaun Watson's loss was Kyler Murray's game. And we also knew, Kyler Murray, who has a chance to develop into something special because he's already pretty good, with DeAndre Hopkins, that's real. Yes, J.J. Watt, Stephen A., what do I say? Game recognize game. Real recognize real. J.J. Watt sees Kyler Murray and says, yep, that's a baller. And that makes a difference. Doesn't mean it's the only reason that he's going, but I'll bet you he wasn't going to wind up on a team, and he didn't. Where he looks at the quarterback, says, nope, that guy's not a baller. He's basically saying, that dude's a baller. If they didn't have him, I wouldn't be here.
I'm not trying to say the man doesn't believe in Kyler Murray. I'm not trying to call Kyler Murray some scrub. I know what a young stud he is. What I'm saying is, when he stands before the microphones and say, that's why I chose Arizona, I don't believe that's the primary reason. That's all I'm saying. And I think that I think all those reasons I gave are pretty damn profound, okay? When you sit up there and you think about the weather, the taxes, the defense, all right? All of those things. What's his plans for retirement? It's only a 2-year deal. I mean, I think those reasons are far more profound than Kyler Murray. I'm sorry. Now, he's a part of the equation because you certainly don't want to go to a situation that doesn't have a quarterback. I understand that. But let's not act like, oh, my Lord. And you know what? I had to come to Arizona because of this kid. This kid right here is why I, J.J. Watt. Now, DeAndre Hopkins tried to say it was a free agent, and he chose Arizona, and he said that, I'd believe him, because he's the wide receiver, and that man's going to be throwing him the football. But J.J. Watt trying to get sacks alongside Chandler Jones on the defensive line for the Arizona Cardinals, who's been in Houston, a no-state income tax state, by the way, in Texas, okay? He's been in Houston all of these years. When I think about all of those things, and it
you
being
play California,
similar
play
to California weather, but not
play
with the
Aaron
Texas,
Donald.
Come on now. Come on now. Come on now. That's all I'm trying to talk about here.
Look,
right?
I would love for a player like J.J. Watt to come out and say, there are 23 million guaranteed reasons why I signed with Arizona. But I don't
doesn't
really
mean anything with the
think
taxes.
That's what it is. We just showed the graphic, Stephen A. I mean, it doesn't hurt. We just showed the graphic. Kyler Murray's QBR, and we know year two is really the development year. That's where you want to see, like, why am I not high on Danny Dimes anymore? Why is it Danny Nichols? Year two, I didn't see the development. Kyler Murray, QBR, you saw it. 57 and change as a rookie, pretty good. Almost 70 as a second-year player. He's trending up and fast, and J.J. Watt saw it.
Let me tell you something, Max Kellerman. And I'm going to put it out there. Molly, get that. Could y'all get that off the screen? And then listen to me, man, because Max Kellerman, you know this stuff. But we're going to crystallize it for the American people right now. Could y'all put me on camera, please, and let me break this down? Max Kellerman, 23 million divided by 2 means 11.5 million. All right? Because that's what Uncle Sam is coming for. All right? That's automatic. And then after that, Max Kellerman, you got an additional 13% if you're talking about the state of California.
Oh.
All right? That's going to dwindle it even more.
Oh.
All right? I mean, listen, man. I mean, everybody, it's actually a disservice to these professional athletes when we just throw out the number. Oh, the $31 million. Oh, the $23 million in guaranteed money. Well, I mean, that's what you gross. Damn it, what matters is what you net, what you go home with, okay? And what he would go home with if he was in California with Aaron Donald.
How would he do it on $10 million a
year? Would be less than $10 million. But being in Arizona, well, guess what? It's a few million more. That needs to be said, damn it. I'm sick and tired of people not taking into account Uncle Sam's take in all of this stuff. I certainly pay attention to it. Now, I don't like it.
Stephen A., it's actually 23
guaranteed.
Of course,
when you make all that money
that's so it's half that again.
That's right.
How's he going to do it on 5 and change?
I mean, look at Stephen A. He's so much happier right now. We have L.A. Steve this week. Now, when you come back next week, you might be a little grumpy. You're much happier when you're on the West Coast. I noticed that. It's that sunshine.
As long as I get to leave.
All right, guys, let's keep going here. As contract negotiations between Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys continue, NFL Network's Jane Slater joined the Dan Patrick Show on Monday and said he's looking to be paid right behind Patrick Mahomes. Can I get a Super Bowl champion, please? Because I need one for this discussion. Can somebody make that happen, please? There we go. Rob Ninkovich, good to see you. What's going on, Rob? Actually, two-time Super Bowl champ. Let me not forget what those Patriots did. Rob, we'll get to you in just a second. Stephen A., if this is true, that he wants to be right behind Patrick Mahomes, is he overplaying his hand?
You could say that he is, but I don't care. I think Jerry Jones has put him in that situation. I think that if this is strictly, if they had a better relationship, if there was a better relationship that existed between Dak Prescott and Cowboys owner Jerry Jones and VP Stephen Jones, I don't think this would be the situation. I think if they had treated him like Tony Romo, if they valued him more than they did, I don't think this is the situation. I think they reached an agreement 2 years ago, and everybody's moving forward, and we're not even talking about this right now. But because they played hardball, because they've constantly put Dak Prescott in a situation where they wanted him to show improve, regardless of what he did. When they made sure to take care of everybody and give them their market value, from the offensive linemen to linebackers like Jalen Smith, to wide receivers like Amari Cooper, to running backs like Ezekiel Elliott, to sit up there and then come to Dak Prescott and don't want to talk market value, and instead you want to define for him what he deserves, as opposed to him exercising his market value just like you did with the other players, you find yourself in this situation. And I think relationships, when we talk about the world of business and how relationships matter, this is one of those situations where it matters. If you were pragmatic and had a strictly business approach with everybody else, that would be one thing. If you had a personal relationship with other folks, and that's what it was, that's what it was. But to treat Dak Prescott differently, I think that's what this is about with Dak Prescott. You have tried to treat him differently. You've gotten away with it for 4 years. You're not getting away with it this time. Now I've got you over a barrel, and I'm loving it. I think that's what Dak Prescott is saying right now, and I can't say I blame him.
Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I agree. Look, it's not Dak's fault. It's not Dak's fault that Dallas did this. They put themselves in this position. Cowboys. This is a supply and demand league. You need a quarterback. You need a good quarterback if you want to win, especially. So a couple of years ago, they didn't want to pay Dak. And Dak wanted a four-year contract. He didn't want the five-year contract. They could have potentially rolled out the red carpet for Dak a couple of years ago. But no, they didn't do that. They wanted to wait. They wanted to see things. Well, along that timeline, and they waited, Dak's value increased and continued to grow and grow and grow. So it's not the player's fault. It's not Dak's fault that he's trying to get the most value in what he gives that team. And to be second behind Patrick Mahomes, I mean, I don't take anything against Dak for trying to do that. Not at all. I mean, he's a football player. You have a very small window to make the most that you possibly can in the NFL. And look, it goes each way. The players, sometimes they have the advantage, and then most of the times they don't have the advantage at all. The teams take advantage of the player. So anytime a player has a chance to put the team over the barrel, I don't have a problem with that. Go out there, make as much money as you can, because in 15 years, there'll be somebody else that they're dealing with. But Dak will be sitting somewhere sipping a pina colada because he made $45 to $50 million a year.
Is Dak Prescott overplaying his hand? The answer is yes. But let's go back a little bit. Jerry Jones was the first one to overplay his hand. Drafted a guy in the fourth round. Dak was obviously a good player from the very beginning, and they kept him at $1 million, $2 million a year for way too long when they could have signed him to an extension earlier on, maybe for an upper middle-class contract in the 20s, let's say, which you'd figure a guy early on making two a year would sign. They opted not to. They opted to wait till the 11th hour, and then played him, not cheap exactly, but they played a little hardball with him. Like, they gave him a Wentz Goff kind of deal. Both those contracts were mistakes, by the way, as it turns out. And maybe even just a little bit less. Now, Dak, so they overplayed their hand early. Now, Dak, a couple things happened to give him real leverage. One, the NFC East quarterbacks are not good. And so the division became so weak that Dak offers you a chance just by signing him to host home playoff games. You get a home playoff game, more than likely, if Dak is your quarterback for the foreseeable future until they get some quarterbacks in the NFC East. So that's worth the premium. The other thing is, with Andy Dalton, you think, oh, pretty good backup. They won't fall off that much, because really it's a lot about the receivers and the offensive line. They fell off a whole lot offensively. So those things swung in Dak's favor. And now he has all this leverage. Is he overplaying his hand now? Yes, I believe he is. Because you can't, if you're the Cowboys, pay over $40 million a year for a guy and still hope to try to compete for a Super Bowl if that guy is not good enough to make up for other deficiencies. And the Cowboys have a lot of holes on this team. And the other thing that happened is Russell Wilson has said he's named the Cowboys as one of the places he'd agree to a trade to. And when Russell Wilson, who's better than Dak Prescott, and relatively inexpensive, says that,
it affects your leverage in the other direction. So is he overplaying his hand? Yes, I think Jerry did first. I think Dak is now. And neither side seems to sound to me like people who are trying to make a deal.
Well, listen, that's the whole point. And if you're not trying to make a deal, why is that if you're Jerry Jones? Because you got to remember, if Dak Prescott is not trying to make a deal, it makes perfect sense. And the reason why it would make perfect sense is because, he's got the leverage right now. He's going to hold him over a barrel. He's got to come back from that nasty injury. And so we don't know how healthy he is or how healthy he will be in the immediate future. There's some question marks in that regard. Fair enough. But if you're Jerry Jones, what excuse was there? Because you've been acting like this. Dak Prescott wanted to do a deal 2 years ago. He wanted to do a deal last year. A matter of fact, according to the reports, we were told it really wasn't about the money. It was about the years. And let's take that. Let's put that in consideration. And Rob, help me out here. So I got a quarterback, and this brother's thrown for nearly 5,000 yards, 30 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, 4,900 plus yards. And I'm holding him over a barrel, and it ain't because of the money. It's because he wants out in 4 years, and I want him to stay five. And I'm 78 years old. Think about that for a second. Who does that? Who does that? I'm 77, 78 years old. I'm on the record literally talking about my own mortality. How I'm running out of time. This is what Jerry Jones has said. And the sticking point is he wants out in four. And I want him locked in until for at least five. Who does that? Help me out, Rob.
I mean, obviously, it's somebody that likes to control and have power over a situation. It's plain and simple. I mean, a lot of guys that are in positions of Jerry Jones and their owners, they didn't get to those positions by just saying, okay, you want four, I'll give you four. No, I want five. You're going to give me 5 years or else you're not going to play here. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's stubborn hard-headedness that could potentially affect the outcome of everybody else on that team. Because, look, if I was an eight-year player, a nine-year player, a veteran player, and I didn't have the opportunity to play with a good quarterback, I'd be a little upset because I know playing 10, 12 years isn't a possibility in the NFL. So they need to figure it out for everybody else on that roster.
For sure. Sometimes our ego gets the best of us, right? Everybody's got one. All right, fellas, that'll do it. Good stuff. Thanks to Joe Montana, Amanda Nunes, Rob Ninkovich for joining us, Stephen A. Max. I'll see you guys tomorrow. Bye.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.